Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Monday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooke. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
Debbie Brooke, founder of Homeopathy World Community. I'm taking time out in this sunny day to begin with some inspiration to talk a lot about current events and to read the words of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann in his Organon of Medicine. Today is July 18th, 2011. This is study session number 145. Thanks so much for joining me today. If you're not on the live chat right now, you can always download the archives after they're complete, after a show is complete. And we love when you click the listen, the friend, favorite, and post a comment on the live chat or onto the Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio website. Share this with your friends on Twitter. Ask them to come right on in. We've got a whole hour show today. And post the link onto your Facebook page. You can listen to the old shows, as I said, by downloading them to your computer, your iTunes, your iPod, your whatever player you've got. And if you are a professional homeopath and have colleagues in the HWC community, you may place an application to join in and post your blogs and comments. We always have some kind of inspiration. And today I received a message from Positively Zen Maria on Twitter that said, the affirmation of the day is, love, health, and wealth flows abundantly into my life. And I really enjoy these quotes, these affirmations that we can tell ourselves and focus our mind on the positive, even though we know there's a lot of things going on in the world that appears to be negative. They truly are positive in some way. We just don't know yet what the outcome will be. Also, I'd like to read a little quote from Margaret Lucy Tyler, who lived 1875 to 1943. We've got a little picture of her up on the Homeopathy World Community Facebook fan page. She says, quote, homeopathy arrived a full 100 years before its time. Homeopathic drug pictures, that was from that book of hers. It says, it was then completely revolutionary and met with fierce opposition, but its unanswerable appeal was to results, and those who had once witnessed its amazing powers of relief in sickness and pain had perforce to adopt it in their practice. Homeopathy, being power, all capital letters, has survived, but it is only in our day that science is demonstrating its absolute reasonableness and showing that it is not up to date, but has always been before date. So that's how she started. It's been before its time. These are the folks who are precocious and genius and bring insights into the world before they're ready to be accepted by the masses, by the general population. They seem to be outside of that sphere of sanity. But in reality, they are the ones who see the reality and the truth. And I want to thank those people who are on the live chat. We've got quite a few guests today. Please do announce who you are and any comments or questions. I will do my best to put forth, and even if I don't know the answer, we'll ask other people to chime in there. I wanted to bring your attention today. We're going to read aphorisms number 221 and onward once we get started with the readings. I wanted to bring your attention today to some important news. One is an article by Heidi Stevenson, one of the HWC members and fantastic advocates for health freedom, for homeopathy, and your rights. She has written on her website, Gaia Health, a new blog came out just today, July 18th, 2011, called The Theft of Health Rights, Can It Be Stopped? She says, we're losing the right to manage our own health. Even the right to choose our food is being stolen. We can stop it, but only by ending the basis on which it's being done, not by addressing each action. So what does she have to tell us? A stunning theft of our rights is happening now right under our collective noses. We're losing the right to manage our personal health as we see fit. It's a right so basic that no one ever thought to list it among the rights of free speech and assembly. Who could have ever imagined that something so basic might come into question? That, though, is exactly what is happening. Some of us try to do battle, but we've been focusing our losses as they occur. We combat genetically modified foods. We have many, many articles on HWC regarding that, and we want to give our thanks and applause to Victor, who has three ongoing research and resource list blogs there for GMO and GE-free. So I'm continuing with Heidi's article. She says, loss of access to vitamins and herbs and much more. And, you know, Heidi has created some petitions that have gotten a lot of press lately, and we're going to be talking about the newest one she's created. The war is being fought on so many different fronts that we're all suffering from battle fatigue. We win an occasional bout, but lose most, which adds to our frustration. Can this war on our personal rights be won? Are our children destined to have no choice about what they eat or how to treat illness? She says, I must believe that we can win. But since introducing and dealing with Stop the Traditional Herbal Medicine Products Directive petition, which was the first one she created, it has become obvious that a new approach needs to be found. So maybe she's telling us that all of these petitions are not doing everything we hoped they could do. I wanted to interject also, it's not just foods. Even our airwaves, our telecommunications, the ability and right to read our articles is under some control, and our air through chemtrails and other unseen forces, who is buying the air that we breathe, that is a whole nother topic, but really under the umbrella of are our rights being stolen right from under our noses? Well, if we can't breathe clean air, then definitely it is not. Continuing with what Heidi says, fighting skirmishes and not the war. We've been focused on each incursion as it's brought to us, but we haven't looked at the overall picture. Even if we win a large percentage of the battles, we will still lose the war. The foes of health freedom will keep coming. When they lose one battle, they come back from a slightly different direction. I'm getting the feeling of a little Pac-Man game here, Heidi. And if you are listening, I welcome you to call in. Just give me a shout out and let me know that you're there. We've still got quite a few people in the chat listening. So she says, take a look at what's happened in the battle against genetically modified GM organisms. We've won skirmishes here and there, but then what happens? The profiting corporations and the agencies in charge find other ways to get what they want, and they're getting clever and quicker in their methods. Boy, oh boy. The application for approval of Monsanto's Scott GM Kentucky Bluegrass by the USDA resulted in an outcry against it. It looked like we were winning. Then, a week ago, the USDA quietly, very quietly, announced that they will no longer even put up a show of controlling certain GMOs, specifically Monsanto's Roundup Ready Kentucky Bluegrass. And I know that she has a link here. It probably goes to Mike Adams in Natural News, who is really on top of these issues, and he creates many wonderful videos and blogs. So go back and take a look at that. A different approach is what she says. We need to address the tricks being used to force these disastrous rulings on us. We must stop them from claiming powers that they do not have. Therefore, I propose that we start by addressing one of the most significant claims being made in both the U.S. and the European Union. Both the U.S. FDA and the EU have been redefining terms to allow them to regulate foods, vitamins, and herbs as if they were drugs. And that's the point, folks. The FDA is now labeling foods, vitamins, and herbs as if they are drugs and then regulating them in the same manner that pharmaceutical drugs were regulated. A now famous example is contained in a letter that the FDA sent to a distributor of walnuts. In it, they claimed, "We have determined that your walnut products are promoted for conditions that cause them to be drugs, because these products are intended for use in the prevention, mitigation, and treatment of disease," unquote. Just making a health claim for a food has, according to the FDA, literally turned it into a drug. That would, of course, be absurd if it weren't so frighteningly effective. We all know that we are what we eat. We all know that food is God's natural healing essence for us to keep ourselves alive. That is my own opinion. And Heidi says, in other cases, the FDA and the EU decide that a known health benefit of a food puts it into a category of drugs. The mere claim of a benefit makes that food a drug. In other cases, a chemical is found to exist in a food, but has been isolated and turned into a pharmaceutical drug. The FDA decides that these foods may now be regulated as drugs. It's a magical thinking, but reason and rationality have nothing to do with achieving the goal of controlling everything that people ingest and making it a profit center controllable only by big pharma and the agencies that they are clearly at its beck and call. As a result of these absurdities, the FDA, along with its EU equivalents, have deemed that Cheerios cereal, walnuts, marmalade made from Seville oranges, and even Marmite may be regulated as drugs. These letters are being sent out by the dozens with the power of the FDA behind them. The letters usually do the job. They stifle free speech by preventing health claims being made, even when they're true and backed up by dozens of scientific research projects. They force companies to stop producing and distributing products that people want, and they force companies to go out of business. Can you imagine? How can we all stand up against this? These letters that are going out to regular companies that provide our daily nutrition and telling them to stop making claims. The first cause, a plan to claim food as food. We can't end this destruction of our rights simply by protesting each incident. By the time these limitations are pushed on us, it is too late. We must address the basis on which these rules are made. We must ensure that at a minimum, laws are enacted that remove the ability to limit our access to natural products. Food must be recognized as food, not treated as drugs. To this end, I'm starting two petitions, and this is Heidi talking, one in the United States and one in the EU to address this concern. However, these petitions are not the usual sort. They will form the basis of many actions. People who sign are asked to be part of the movement to claim back our health rights. We need to let politicians know that we are serious, we are organized, and we are growing. People who sign are asked to also send letters or emails to their representatives in Congress or Parliament, thus sending a constantly increasing stream of messages to keep the issue in front of them. So we're going to send you the links to that. and I will put it on the chat, and we'll make a blog on it on HWC. And there is the link right there. And then a couple of other things I wanted to make note of, because I like to provide some current events, is how the Safe Chemicals Act of 2011 would fix TSCA. And this is something brand new to protect all Americans from toxic chemicals, which are everywhere by the tens of thousands. And the laws are not protecting us. The current law of the Toxic Substances Control Act of 1976 is old and ineffective. And there is a website where we can go. It says on April 14, 2011, Senator Frank Lautenberg, a Democrat from New Jersey, introduced the Safe Chemicals Act of 2011, a comprehensive bill aimed at revamping the decades-old Toxic Substances Control Act. And this website says to contact your senators and ask them to co-sponsor the bill. And perhaps at another show we'll go more deeply into this and understand what is going on in that area and how you can participate in the legislation to back up your local state's senators and congressmen. Okay, we're going to go ahead on to reading the Organon today. I wanted to thank you all for listening, and thank also to sponsor Roger Van Zandvoort for showing his belief in HWC. And people can go to www.completedynamics.com and learn about his incredible case management analysis and Materia Medica computer program. We're now reading aphorism number 221 of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann's Organon of Medicine. It says, if, however, insanity or mania caused by fright, vexation, the abuse of spirituous liquors have suddenly broke out as an acute disease in the patient's ordinary calm state, although it almost always arises from internal sorrow, like a flame bursting forth from it, yet when it occurs in this acute manner, it should not be immediately treated with antisorics, but in the first place with remedies indicated for it out of the other class of proved medicaments, for example, aconite, belladonna, stramonium, hyoscyamus, mercury, in highly potentized minute homeopathic doses in order to subdue it so far that the sore shall, for the time, revert to its former latent state, wherein the patient appears as if quite well. So he's telling us that we can have these surges of what appears to be insanity or mania, something that is caused by a fright or an abuse of a liquor or some sort of addiction that a person has, something that gives a shock to the system. And that is why it appears that many of the remedies that he's chosen to select for us, aconite, belladonna, and stramonium and hyoscyamus, all are shock remedies. Those are all plant remedies, and the other one he gave, mercury, is a mineral. But he's saying that even though the core essence of this comes from a latent and soric disease, what we're seeing at the outset in these cases are acute outbreaks, and in that case, we need to handle the immediate symptoms. This, in order to get at the deeper level, we need to first address what we are seeing happening in the living organism from this shock. And we move on to aphorism number 222, because there are no footnotes there. Dr. Hahnemann states, but such a patient who has recovered from an acute mental or emotional disease by the use of these non-antisoric medicines should never be regarded as cured. On the contrary, no time should be lost in attempting to free him completely. And he has a footnote. By means of a prolonged antisoric treatment from the chronic miasm of the sore, which it is true has now become once more latent, but is quite ready to break out anew. If this be done, there is no fear of another similar attack if he attend faithfully to the diet and regimen prescribed for him. So you see, already Hahnemann says that the person under care needs to have and keep with a good nutritional diet. And this, our freedom should not be lost in our ability to say this person needs to eat some good, healthy, fresh, organic products and produce and vegetables, walnuts and almonds that have not been irradiated, and kind of like a cleansing diet where they're not eating processed foods, especially today, where so many of our foods have been tampered with. So this means that the homeopath is able to provide a nutritional diet for the patient to help him heal. And many times Hahnemann will say to provide some broth or not to smoke or not to take liquor, other kinds of things that should be taken faithfully as a health-saving diet. And even the regimen prescribed for him, meaning if you want to tell your patient that they need to do some deep breathing and meditation and stress reduction or movement or sunshine, or even sit with your family for a relaxing dinner. All of these things are healing for the mind and body. So here he says in aphorism 222 that even though the patient may appear to have been recovered after giving one of those shock remedies, those acute remedies for the emotional upset, we still need to look deeper because that is going to reoccur again and again until we get to the anti-soric, the fundamental essence of that case. And so he is going to address some anti-soric remedies. He has the footnote, it says, "It very rarely happens that a mental or emotional disease of long standing ceases spontaneously, for the internal dyskrasia transfers itself again to the grosser corporeal organs," which means that the internal organs and tissues are being affected from this long standing chronic illness. "Such are the few cases met with now and then, where a former inmate of a madhouse has been dismissed, apparently recovered. Hitherto, moreover, all madhouses have continued to be chock full, so that the multitude of other insane persons who seek for admission into such institutions could scarcely find room in them unless some of the insane in the house died. No one is ever really and permanently cured in them." A convincing proof, among many others, of the complete nullity of the non-healing art hitherto practiced, which has been ridiculed, honored by allopathic ostentation with the title of rational medicine. How often, on the other hand, has not the true healing art, genuine, pure homeopathy, been able to restore such unfortunate beings to the possession of their mental and corporeal health, and to give them back again to their delighted friends and to the world. Now, what would Hahnemann say today if he came to see these mental institutions? And many often, those persons who would normally be put into mental institutions, which they are full up just as they were in his day, and so many of them cannot be sustained because our states don't have funding to keep up these mental institutions, and they get closed down. These people end up on the street, or they end up in prison. And what is the behavior? How do they treat and care for these people? Very often you will see that they wake up in the morning and they are handed a whole slew of drugs to sedate them. And that is the allopathic method. They do not really know about energy medicine. They do not know about really the healing diet, dietary and other regimens. Maybe these people do get out into the sunshine a little bit That is nice. Maybe they do get a little bit of music therapy or art therapy. That is nice. But homeopathy can do so much, because perhaps these people went into this insane state simply from some sort of shock in their life, some emotional, mental shock, some relationship breakup, some loss of livelihood. All of these kinds of things, homeopathy has means to help the individual heal. And so he is not talking any differently than we would today. Let's go on to aphorism number 223. But if the antipsoriatic treatment be omitted, then we may almost assuredly expect, from a much slighter cause than brought on the first attack of the insanity, the speedy occurrence of a new and more lasting and severe fit, during which the sora usually develops itself completely and passes into either a periodic or continued mental derangement, which is then more difficult to be cured by antipsorics. So he is giving us instructions here as physicians, as homeopaths, if you are using homeopathy, that we can't skip over what happens once the person appears to have recovered from the initial shock. But we have to have them come back into the consultation room and inquire more deeply and take a full case and understand what other remedies might help them to heal more fully. And so now, if you don't have any comments or questions, I'm going to go ahead and read aphorism number 224. If the mental disease be not quite developed, and if it be still somewhat doubtful whether it really arose from a corporeal affection or did not rather result from faults of education, bad practices, corrupt morals, neglect of the mind, superstition, or ignorance, the mode of deciding this point will be that if it proceed from one or other of the latter causes, it will diminish and be improved by sensibly friendly exhortations and consolatory arguments, serious representations, and sensible advice. Whereas a real moral or mental malady, depending on bodily disease, would be speedily aggravated by such a course. The melancholic would become still more dejected, querulous, inconsolable, and reserved. The spiteful maniac would thereby become still more exasperated, and the chattering fool would become manifestly more foolish. He does have a footnote to that, and I just wanted to give everybody a chance to get onto the chat if they have anything to say. I welcome your comments and see how this aligns with your thinkings today. So I'm going to go ahead and continue on with this aphorism number 224. I do not think that Hahnemann misses a beat. I do not think that he misses the most minute possibility, like an investigator of mystery of diseases. He understands human nature. He understands the etiology of the cause of disease, and he is trying to teach us this in his Organon of Medicine, because he says, if the mental disease be not quite developed, and if it be still somewhat doubtful whether it really arose from a corporeal affection, so meaning, is this mental disease from something wrong with the brain? Very often, we have hearing so many messages from Big Pharma in the commercials that there's some sort of brain chemical dysfunction, something missing in your brain, some nutrient, some supplement, some chemical disorder. And this is what is causing your mental disease. Whereas, he also says, did not rather result from faults of education. Is it possible that somebody was mistaught something, and from this they had a misattunement, a miscommunication. You know, when you're taught something and it's not true and you have a discrepancy in your life of what you're living and what you've heard and been taught, you might have something, some wires crossed in there, something that's not in alignment with what your true life experience is, and it can cause some disruption in your emotional balance, in your emotional health. So we have to look at that. You know, if someone was lied to as a child and they lived their life and they lived that lie all their life and they couldn't console themselves. And then we have, Hahnemann tells us from bad practices. So if you're drinking soda every single day and those sodas have chemicals that can cause misattunements in your brain, in the way your hormones work, in the way your organs work, all of those things can cause hyperactivity and who knows what else. We've got a huge blog, even obesity, there's a huge blog on HWC all about soda and what effects it has on the mind and body. Hahnemann talks about corrupt morals and the neglect of the mind. So we need to give ourselves some time away to reflect, to have peaceful moments, to get into nature. These are all things that we need to do. We need to take care of ourselves in not just body, but in the mind and the soul. He says superstition or ignorance. All of these things he's giving as potential reasons why a person may not seem altogether in their mind. The mode of deciding this point will be, he says, that if it proceed from one or other of the latter causes, it will diminish and be improved by sensibly friendly exhortations and consolatory arguments. So all of these things will cause flare-ups. All, you know, like looking at a line and a curve, when things are quiet, when things are peaceful, when things are not being disrupted, then the person seems to be quite normal. But when something in that sensitivity of that individual is touched upon, whether it be an argument in the family, whether it be something that they view on in their life, in their readings, on the television, it could cause some disruption. I was watching a show called Bizarre ER the other night, and I realized I don't think it's going to be healthy for me to watch these really outrageous things that are happening to individuals. Well, I could tell you a story. One of them was a man is rushed into the hospital, seemingly having a heart attack, and the doctor's trying to figure it out. And he's claiming, who his wife brought him in, he's claiming it's the clam chowder. They're having a big birthday party, and the wife made him clam chowder. And he's really, really sick, let me tell you. And they're taking an EKG, and they're giving him oxygen. They're trying to settle him down and find out the cause of his problem. Meanwhile, the wife is in the waiting room suddenly, burst into this manic state of total hysteria, crazy, they try to calm her down and find out what's wrong with her. Now the doctor is thinking in the ER, why is there two people in the family who are having these symptom expressions that are so diverse, so different, and yet they come from the same family. At the same time, there's something wrong. This doctor is really a good investigator. Hahnemann would be proud of him. So over the course of 6 hours, the woman is kept quiet in another room without medication, and she slowly comes back to her normal state of being. Her mind becomes normal again. She's been given oxygen, and she is now okay. So the doctor's trying to still find out what's going on. Over the course of a day, the husband also seems to be, his heart rhythmia goes back to normal, and this is over the course of a number of hours. Meanwhile, in rushes into the ER, down the hallway, a young woman on the stretcher. And the wife of this man now starts to go into a panic state and collapses because that is her daughter. Her daughter just came in to her home for this party that they were having, and The husband is still ranting about the clam chowder. And now the doctor's trying to make a connection between three people in the family that are coming into the ER. What's going on? The doctor puts two and three together and says, get the police, get the security, go to the house and see what's wrong. See what is going on, test the clam chowder, whatever it might be. They get there. They open the garage door, and there is a car with the motor running, with the entire garage filled with carbon monoxide and the house obviously seeping this poisonous, toxic gas. So now we see that the wife came back to her senses because she was not being in the vicinity, the environment, inhaling the toxic fumes anymore. The husband came back to normal. His symptoms were improved, but the daughter, who was left at home breathing the fumes, is in a total comatose state, really on her deathbed. They don't know whether she is going to live. And what happened? It was totally by accident. The husband said to the wife, I need to go warm up the car because I need to go to the airport to pick up our daughter for the party. Meanwhile, they get a call from the daughter who says, my plane came in early. I'm getting a taxi. I'm coming home. They forgot all about the car running in the garage. So this is really an accident, and the amount of guilt that the parents have are incredible. Meanwhile, trying to figure out what to do with the daughter, because now they have the cause, the etiology of the coma. They call up emergency and find out that she needs to be flown an hour away into a hyperbaric chamber of oxygen and to recover. And fortunately, she made it through. So I don't know whether these are the kinds of shows that I am supposed to watch, but there are a lot of other things, like a guy with a huge knife stuck in his back. And I don't know, it may not be the best thing for my mental clarity and sanity to be watching, but it is quite exciting. Let's go ahead. Let's see how much time we have. We have plenty of time to keep rolling with our aphorisms. Today, 224, I took you on a little side trip there to that television show. He says, whereas real moral or mental malady, so there you go. There's an example. The woman in the story that I just told you represented a real organic reason for her to have this mental derangement, whereas somebody who is going to, of course, Hahnemann would want to speak with this woman after she recovered, because her weakness was in her mind that she went crazy, whereas the husband, his weakness was in his heart arrhythmia. So we can see the difference in how an individual responds to outside sources, whether it be a germ or a toxin. Each person is going to respond in their individual manner to show the totality of the drug symptoms, the diseases that this drug could cause. Now, I did kind of, my brain kind of went into a flash and said, boy, give that lady some carbo-veg, or all of them some carbo-veg, because they're missing their oxygen. And that's one of the things that's written in the repertory in the Materia Medica. I don't know whether anybody else was thinking about that too today. Well, so here we have the real moral and mental malady, depending upon bodily disease, would be speedily aggravated by such a course. The melancholic would become still more dejected, querulous, inconsolable, reserved. The spiteful maniac would thereby become still more exasperated. And the chattering fool would become manifestly more foolish. So what he's telling us, that with without the follow-up care, if there's a reoccurrence in anything that's going to touch off this kind of heart malady or mental derangement, or this woman, poor young lady, went into a coma, that the body and mind is going to be affected again and again, depending on what assaults come into their life. So now we're going to read the footnote to aphorism 224. It says, it would seem as though the mind, in these cases, felt with uneasiness and grief the truth of these rational representations and acted upon the body as if it wished to restore the lost harmony. But that the body, by means of its disease, reacted upon the organs of the mind and disposition and put them in still greater disorder by a fresh transference of its sufferings on to them. Let's see what Hahnemann is trying to teach us here. One of the things that comes to mind in this aphorism is something that I open up my Sunday night meditations with, and that is the fact that our mind experiences things, whether they are happening in the present, past, or future. Whatever our mind is thinking, our body is experiencing. So if you are thinking about a very tart lemon, something that is so sour, and you're imagining that lemon, either smelling it or putting it to your nose and inhaling the sweetness, your mouth will begin to produce some saliva. And if you are thinking of some fearful thing that happened in your past, your mind will start your body to go into a somewhat of a frightful panic state. So, or a joyous state, if you're thinking of something, thinking of your little child holding your baby, or your grandchild running into your arms as you open the door, or your pet, or whatever it is. You're thinking of something and it has an emotional quality to it, emotional state. Your body is responding in the same way. So this is what he's saying. It would seem as though the mind in these cases felt with uneasiness and grief the truth of these rational representations. So here we're dealing with some sort of a mental disharmony, and acted upon the body as if it wished to restore the lost harmony. But that the body, by means of its disease, reacted upon the organs of the mind and disposition and put them in still greater disorder by a fresh transference of its sufferings. Thus, we think about the person who has lost a loved one, and every time, I mean, it could be years since that loss, but when you think about that loved one who is now departed and how you miss them and how they're lost and how they're missing all of the things and joys and being able to participate in your life, you have that sadness there. It's absolutely normal. I mean, it's absolutely normal, yet it is affecting your heart. It is affecting your mind. It is affecting how you breathe and the rhythm and pace of your breath. Therefore, he says, we need to assist the individual by taking a deeper case, not just the immediacy of it in an acute state. I have been so busy reading my notes that I haven't checked if there's any comments. I hope you've been keeping up with this so far. And we're going to go ahead and continue on aphorism number 225. Hahnemann states, there are, however, as has just been stated, certainly a few emotional diseases which have not merely been developed into that form of corporeal diseases, but which, in an inverse manner, the body being but slightly indisposed, originate and are kept up by emotional causes, such as continued anxiety, worry, vexation, wrongs, and the frequent occurrence of great fear and fright. This kind of emotional diseases in time destroys the corporeal health often to a great degree. So he's reaffirming what I just said. And, you know, we're living in a very important shift in the universe, a shift in our world, a shift in time, where we're seeing all of these crises, population crises, environmental crisis, traumas to health, to well-being, to security, financial depression, all of these things are affecting us as we think about them, as we reflect upon them, as we go into these states of anxiety for loss of our job, for loss of financial security, for people who are having to move away or change location, for loss of friendships, for worry about accidents, for the state of the world, and things that are vexing us, things that are getting on our nerves and are irritating us about what we see. I mean, what I talked about at the beginning of the show, it can actually cause us to have a derangement of our emotional stability and balance. I mean, I think that we need to act upon it. And if we feel like we are doing something in our best benefit, we can feel better about it and not feel disheartened. But it can take a toll as well. So we need to have the support of friends, of being able to talk to each other and communicate openly and clearly, and also to have at our side the remedies that are going to heal us through all of these traumas. And as he says at the end of the sentence, it says, this kind of emotional diseases in times destroys the corporeal health. That means our physical being, our tissues and organs, how our body runs fully functioning naturally. We're going to have these problems as if we don't have a good lifestyle and keep our arteries open and keep our minds open and just have some sort of sensation that we're doing something for our good health. We're now going to go on. Let's see how much time we have today. We have about 10 minutes or so to continue with aphorism number 226. It says, Hahnemann states, it is only such emotional diseases as these, which were first engendered and subsequently kept up by the mind itself, that while they are yet recent, and before they have made very great inroads on the corporeal state, may, by means of psychical remedies, such as a display of confidence, friendly exhortations, sensible advice, and often by a well-disguised deception, be rapidly changed into a healthy state of the mind, and with appropriate diet and regimen, seemingly into a healthy state of the body also. Wow. I mean, I think I did not read ahead of Hahnemann, and I'm just following along, but I seem to be right on target with him today. He is saying that here, if you can nip it in the bud, if right at the time of the incident, where there is a disharmony and disorder by a shock, an acute accident, a trauma, if you provide the support that is needed, such as sensible advice, go to definitely get help. If you are in a state of panic or you are frantic because somebody told you something and it is not a good thing in your life, talk it out. Speak to somebody. Get some advice from somebody who is expert in that area, in your workplace, in your home, in your other relationships. Talk to somebody. And he says, display of confidence. So speak to somebody who's going to help you out by saying, you know, things will be better. We're going to get through this together. We're, it's just something that happens and it's only temporary. Or, you know, 50% of people find a statistics that is going to be helpful for somebody. He says to do this. He says, you know, I would say, Hahnemann says, give them a big hug, cuddle them. If they're not well, bring them a dinner. Make them chicken soup. And then he even says, it very fascinating, Hahnemann says, a well-disguised deception. What do you think he is implying here? That means that when somebody says to you, I think I am so ugly, I am not worth living, you know, some craziness, you need to say to them, you know, you are beautiful. We love you. Even if maybe they're not the most beautiful person in the world. Or, you know, like when you see somebody who's just had a baby and you look at that baby and, my God, that is not the prettiest baby that you've ever seen. Yet if you were to say something nasty to that, unhealthy to that mother, it might cause her to have a emotional disturbance. So you must say, find some words to say, what an active baby, what an alert baby, you know, what a head of hair, you know, find something to say that's going to bring some solace to a person when they need it. What else can we say here? He says, be rapidly changed into a healthy state of mind and with appropriate diet and regimen, which he is repeating again and again, that diet is very important. And the regimen of the routine of your day, basically, or your habits, he says, seemingly into a healthy state of the body also. So he has the word in there, seemingly, which to me implies he's saying we need to go further, we need to go deeper, we need to look underneath at that psoric miasm. And here we go, at Organon Aphorism number 227. Hahnemann says, but the fundamental cause in these cases also is a psoric miasm, which was only not yet quite near its full development. And for security's sake, the seemingly cured patient should be subjected to a radical anti-psoric treatment in order that he may not, or she may not, again, as might easily occur, fall into a similar state of mental disease. So he gives us the pattern that we need to look at. We need to look at, take care of the person in their immediate state of being. Initially, it's going to seem pretty clear to us. Usually when we have an acute situation, it's clear to us what remedy is needed. And then we have to delve in a little bit deeper so that they don't fall back into that acute state. And he's saying it only gets harder to discern. It only gets more deeply into that state of being, how a person, you know, talks themselves into depression. They just look at the worst things in their life and they can't get out of it themselves. And every little thing bothers them and irritates them and dejects them. And when they're rejected and all of these things, they just get worse and worse and worse. So Hahnemann is giving us the next step in the treatment plan for case management, which is try to find the psoric miasm. Okay, aphorism number, Organon Aphorism 228. Here on Hahnemann states, in mental and emotional diseases resulting from corporeal maladies, which can only be cured by homeopathic anti-psoric medicine, conjoined with carefully regulated mode of life and appropriate psychical behavior towards the patient on the part of those about him and of the physician must be scrupulously observed by way of an auxiliary mental regimen. To furious mania, we must oppose calm, intrepidity, well, somebody pronounce that word for me, and cool, firm resolution. To doleful, querulous lamentation, a mute display of commiseration in looks and gestures. To senseless chattering, a silence not wholly inattentive. To disgusting and abominable conduct and to conversation of a similar character, total inattention. Thank you, Hahnemann. Let us ignore the skeptics. We must merely endeavor to prevent the destruction and injury of surrounding objects without reproaching the patient for his acts, and everything must be arranged in such a way that the necessity for any corporeal punishments and tortures, whatever may be avoided, this is so much the more easily effected, because in the administration of the medicine, the only circumstance in which the employment of coercion could be justified, in the homeopathic system, the small doses of the appropriate medicine never offend the taste and may consequently be given to the patient without his knowledge in his drink, so that all compulsion is unnecessary. And now, Hahnemann has put me into a little state of shock with his last statement, given to the patient without his knowledge in his drink. How many homeopaths, how many housewives has done this? I know that I have read that the wife who has the alcoholic husband will put the dose of sulfur into his alcoholic liqueur. And supposedly, this works. Or the person who is addicted to coffee puts the remedy for coffee, Nux Vomica or whatever it might be appropriate, into the coffee to quell the addictions. This is quite amusing, and I know that many people will have an ethical or moral statement about giving a remedy without the patient's knowledge. But we know it is just a energy, and if it is not the right energy, it is not going to create anything into that individual. Plus, if the person is in a state of mania or hysteria or out of their mind, therefore they are not functioning properly, and typically the physician has the ability to take over for as a guide for that individual, for his mental health. So let me check on our time to see if we can finish here. Let's read the footnote and then close the show for today. This is aphorism number 228, in the Organon of Medicine by Samuel Hahnemann. The footnote says, "It is impossible not to marvel at the hard-heartedness and the indiscretion of the medical men in many establishments for patients of this kind, who, without attempting to discover the true and only efficacious mode of curing such diseases, which is by homeopathic medicinal antisoric means, content themselves with torturing these most pitiable of all human beings." Who knows? I don't know whether they had electric shock treatment back then, but that is something that they used to do. Or cold ice baths, that would definitely be torturous for a human being. And he says, content themselves with torturing these most pitiable of all human beings with the most violent blows and other painful torments. They actually drilled holes in the skulls of these mental patients to relieve them. Well, they thought of some sort of a demon in their brain. But by these unconscientious and revolting procedures, they debase themselves beneath the level of the turnkeys in a house of correction. Oh, here he's mentioning prisons, which is exactly what I told you, where so many of these mental and emotionally imbalanced cases are now being put. For the latter inflict such chastisements as the duty devolving of their office and on criminals only, whilst the former appear from a humiliating conscientiousness of their uselessness as physicians, only to vent their spite at the supposed incurability of mental diseases in harshness toward the pitiable innocent sufferers, for they are too ignorant to be of any use and too indolent to adopt a judicious mode of treatment. That is going to be the end of our talk today. And wow, that went very, very fast. I hope that many people will download the archive and listen to this to review their Organon of Medicine. I want to thank everyone for listening to the show today. I love having you. Open the Organon and read it.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with host Debbie Brock on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to take your Organon off the shelf and read it.